Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 14th, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin, and joining me always, Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
And helping working the board this evening, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening from Somerville, sir.
Yes, and Tim, I know you love gospel music, and I know you've seen the board. We still have those Herman Cain classics, but resist, and I will tell everybody there's another program that actually opens up with one of those songs as their music.
Yeah, you did use the term classics loosely, right?
Well, the people that wrote them might be classics, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But before I go any further, let's kind of just set this show up. We have two guests before, and we've had two guests before, but I don't know that we've ever had two guests with the concept of the stature of our guest this evening. In the first half hour, Representative Stacey Abrams is going to join us, and she is one of the fastest rising stars in the Democratic Party across the South. She's the Georgia House Minority Leader, and you know, in the position where if the Democrats were to take the state of Georgia back, she could easily be Speaker of the House. She's in her early 30s. African-American, but as sharp as can be. She's been praised this evening on Daily Kos, not for being on our show, but maybe David Neer will help us out with that too. And then in the second half hour, we're having Mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, running for Governor of Mississippi, Johnny Dupree's coming up. And I know that the other week we had Robert Hooks on, and he told us just fabulous things about Mayor Dupree and how fiscally responsible he's been in his city. So we're going to have him as a guest in the second half hour. So, Tim, you've been on almost every show. Can you remember a pair of guests this strong?
No, I cannot, David, to be honest with you. These are two very good guests tonight.
Yes, I mean, so if you've been on before and you're like, wait, you were probably the single guest, not the pair, so don't be offended. We're just highlighting these
well,
two
individuals. Well, yeah, I'm talking about the pairs.
Yes, I'm just telling people, you know, might be listening, because our guests sometimes become listeners as well. But let's get into some topics, and one kind of is this major topic that may kind of take us through some breaks, and that's the Republican Party of Iowa had their straw poll, and, of course, they had a new candidate jump in the race at the same time, Rick Perry. Now, that actually made it on to the Southern Sports Universe with politics, and Mike brought it up, not me, but we'll get into that later, too. But the straw poll happened, and Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul basically ran away with the thing. Michelle Bachmann won, but by about a point over Ron Paul, and then after Ron Paul, there's a pretty significant divide. And Rick Perry, who obviously didn't work the poll, but everybody knew was getting in, finished in single digits. Catherine, have you seen the numbers and what you make of them?
I haven't seen all the numbers, but, you know, I think this is the sort of the fear that I have. I mean, not a fear. It just seems like what's going to happen this cycle is that the Tea Party folks are really gonna select the candidate for the Republicans, and if I was the Republicans, I would be a little bit nervous about that because I don't see either Ron Paul or Michelle Bachmann as being a particularly viable candidate against President Obama. I mean, that's fine with me. But I think I would think that if I was Mitt Romney or some of the more moderate, not that he's a moderate, but moderate Republicans, this would be a concern to me.
Yeah, maybe a Republican still on the edge, not hanging somewhere down on the wall. They've moved so far to the right. That may be the best most apt analogy.
I think it's they've moved to the right and to the wacky right. I mean, it's the wacky right, not just the right. Right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Absolutely. Well, Tim, we hadn't heard anything out of Ron Paul, and he almost ties Bachman. Why has Paul been so quiet, or Paul's people been so quiet, and then they struck so stealthily, if you will?
Well, first of all, no doubt that Michelle Bachman probably, more than anyone, ended Governor Paulini's bid yesterday. As for her and Ron Paul, this is not a surprising result. Both candidates have a devoted following that are going to show up and vote for things like this. So it's not surprising at all. Perry's entry, he needs to get rid of her because they're going to be going after some of the same voters. And I am sitting here looking at the results. One thing of interest, you know that neither Perry nor Romney even contested this thing, and they both got a few write-in votes. And on the day that Governor Perry entered the race, he actually got more write-in votes at this event than did Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney, while he didn't, play in this thing, if you will, him being the presumptive front runner, you would think more people than that would have written him in. So it's almost like even though he didn't try, it's still a bit of a loss for him.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
Well, you actually get out in this thing and you campaign and you get your people to this thing. I think your campaign pays like $10 a pop for these people to vote. So whoever is organized, whoever is really contesting this thing, it's who's going to fare well in it. Now, Romney did so in 07. I don't know why he chose not to fool with it this year. So it turned to a race between essentially Bachman and Paulini. And if she were to win and he was not to do so well, then the result would happen that did happen. And so bye-bye, Paulinke. I personally think Michelle Bachman is going to hang around and drive Perry and Romney both crazy.
Yeah, I do. She's established herself as a major factor in this race mm-hmm. after holding on to her momentum because, you know, it seemed like she might have peaked 8 weeks ago. But this
uh-huh.
just gives her whole new juice that she's still staying in there. Perry, he gets in the race midweek last week. I mean, I'd heard originally he was going to get in after the Iowa straw poll. I kind of think he wanted to have it both ways. He wanted to get in to where maybe he could finish pretty decent in the thing. But then if he didn't, and he really didn't finish that great, he could say, oh, I really wasn't in. I mean, I wasn't prepared
yeah.
for this thing, so wait till the next thing. So he's trying to both ways, but I do think that with Michelle Bachman doing so well and them both, you know, wanting that Tea Party movement type vote, I think it kind of is a little bit of a hurdle for him, a stumbling block. Catherine?
Well, I agree with you. I think that it was kind of a weird strategy to not, I mean, if it seems to me, I would think he would wait till it was over, and then he wouldn't have, egg on his face for not getting more votes. I haven't looked at the final, where did Herman Cain come? And
fifth.
He
came in fifth with 8.62%.
Which in this race with this number of candidates, fifth was not terrible. Probably he finished fifth, and I doubt Godfather Pizza is the fifth largest pizza chain in America, so he's
but
doing better than
his
business, if you
what made it look bad was that the fourth place finisher was Santorum. I don't see Newt Gingrich's name here anywhere in this top five. You talk about a guy that's taken a nosedive. If you're listening, Newt, get out, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, he's way back. But honestly, if you think about this, Herman Cain has never won anything, and he finished what, you know, there was Rick Santorum, who actually was the crazy senator from Pennsylvania, but a senator nevertheless.
Yeah.
So you have
Herman
that to hang
Cain,
your hat on, if you will.
Herman Cain is Alan Keyes with money. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What did
I
you
mean,
say Herman Cain is?
I think
he's
Alan
Keyes
with money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's got more polish. I will say that. He's got more polish than Keyes. I mean, Keyes just looked crazy 24/7. I think Herman Cain takes an hour or two off a day. you know, I will give Herman Cain that.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
You know, this thing has so many candidates, but honestly, if you add all the seemingly somewhat moderate candidates in this thing up, Huntsman, Pawlenty, Romney, they don't even add up to near what Bachman got. So really, moderation in this poll was nowhere. And the reason I think this is more damning, I mean, okay, y'all three of us are Georgia Democratic activists. If they were having the Georgia straw poll for the Democratic Party in a contested year down in Macon, it cost $10 to have your say in an event that the entire nation was watching, would y'all not be there whether or not somebody paid your $10 or not?
I'm sorry, I had to take another call. Stacey Abrams just called me.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Tim and I'll cover it. Yeah, Tim.
She's 2 minutes away from a landline. She's going to be just a couple minutes late.
Yeah. Well, we'll get her in there. Tim, would you not vote in that, go and
yeah,
vote
I
in
would,
that, even if it costs you on $10?
Yeah, I would like to think that I would, David. But it seems to be in these straw polls the most committed. That's why somebody like Ron Paul would do well. He doesn't have a large group of followers. He's going to get 5 to 10% straight across the board in all these primaries as long as he stays in. But his people show up, and Michelle Bachman's people seem to be that way as well. Now, what I'm wondering is if these people are now going to turn around and start peeling off to Governor Perry, because I really think that him and her are trying to assume the same mantle of Tea Party favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of votes out there to get, particularly in a state like Iowa. But it seems like it's coalesced the moderate vote.
Yeah, let me ask you something else. Don't you think that Governor Perry needs to clear the field as much as he can to make this a one-on-one race with Romney?
Well, obviously needs to clear the field of certain types of candidates, and Michelle Bachman fit into that. The big thing is Sarah Palin, she's still talking about going on tour and going to fairs and eating fair food, Big Brother, tell her what to eat and all this stuff. Well, if she gets in, what would that do to Bachman? Or is there a place for both of them? I have to think that pool's pretty thin with both of them.
I still don't think she's going to do it.
She's
going to do it.
But she keeps on with all that kind of stuff lurking in the background. Catherine, at any point you're finished with, and you want to jump back in, you let us know.
Yeah,
I just don't want Catherine to think I'm leaving her out there. Well, you know, in all these candidates, I mean, some of them have to look and say, what's my strategy now? Newt Gingrich, obviously. I mean, unless it's to collect debt, there isn't much strategy.
Well, John Huntsman,
to me, this is a guy that may be the most core, you know, not far right-wing Republican, because obviously I just don't think Mitt Romney is very core because he's changed positions on half the issues that Americans care about. So I don't get his angle is, if you will. Well, I tell you what,
I believe our guest has just joined us.
I am here.
Yeah, let's leave this discussion for a little bit. Representative Abrams, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, this is the first time we've been so honored to have you on the Kudzu Vine. And since it's our first time, go ahead and just give us a real quick bio on someone that may not know anything about you.
Okay. Well, I serve as the representative for House District 84 as of now, which is the City of Atlanta, DeKalb County. I am also the House Minority Leader. I lead a proud caucus of 63 in the Georgia General Assembly. Originally from Mississippi, I've been in Atlanta for almost 20 years and am a proud graduate of Spelman College, UT Austin, and Yale Law School, and then I had to get a job. So I'm a tax attorney by training and a public servant by choice.
Don't we all? Well, I know you said you serve the 84th district, is that correct?
It is.
84th district. I knew you threw out the number of people in the Democratic caucus. I don't want to transpose those numbers. But we're going to talk about districts. That's one of the reasons we had you on, because I know this week they're starting the redistricting special session, and Catherine was the one that got this contact for us, and this is so great. So I want to let Catherine have the chance to ask the first question or two on redistricting of you. Catherine?
Hello, Representative Adams. Thank you so much for being on. I know you must have a full schedule, so we really appreciate you being on tonight.
Happy to be of help.
I've talked with you on a couple of conference calls about the situation with the redistricting, and I'd like if you could just sort of run down, you know, what the sort of situation is and what our main complaints are. But I would also like to make sure we have time to talk about how activists and Democrats and our representatives can help you in the caucus to, you know, moving forward through this special session and beyond.
Sure.
So if you could just give our listeners a little rundown what these changes, what this redistricting looks like and how awful it could be for Democrats in Georgia.
Okay. Right now there are 180 members of the House. Right now 63 Democrats, 116 Republicans, and one independent. Last, 2 weeks ago, Carolyn Hughley, our whip, saw a version of the map that was being proposed, and what we saw was fairly shocking. They would have paired 13 members of the Democratic caucus, which is about 21% of our total membership. They would have paired only a handful of their own, less than 8% of their membership. They create 5 open seats, and they redraw 6 of our seats to be GOP-leaning seats. In the end, what it would have done is essentially reduced the House Democratic Caucus to 56 members, giving the Republicans 123 majority, which means that they have a supermajority. It takes 120 votes to pass any constitutional amendment, and this would give them that 120 votes with 3 to spare. When we called them out on this, in part because the way they accomplish these pairings is by pairing white Democrats against African-American Democrats. The problem with that is twofold. One is that the Voting Rights Act prohibits racial discrimination regardless of the race of the victim. So racial discrimination against someone white is as egregious as racial discrimination against someone who's black. And I took great exception to that, because the way they justified it was by saying that the Voting Rights Act made them do it. There's nothing in the Voting Rights Act that says that you can or should be able to do so. Now, the issue is there's no legal precedent that says you can't discriminate against white voters because no one's ever tried it before, and clearly the Republicans thought that this would be a great testing ground. The goal and the final result would be that we would lose half of the white members of our caucus, because not only are they drawn against African Americans, they're drawn into African American districts that are now being packed, meaning that additional African-American voters are being put into those districts to pull them out of Republican-leaning districts. We called them on it. I accused the Republicans of doing this. I believe it was systematic. I believe it was intentional. And they responded by saying that my charges were baseless, without validity, and preposterous. However, on Friday, they released a map that, with one exception, did exactly what we said they were doing. The only exception was that the Democrat versus Republican pairing that would have added an additional white member who would lose a seat, that one was removed. But otherwise, what we face is a map that reduces the House Democratic Caucus from 63 to 56, gives Republicans a supermajority, and thus gives them the ability to pass any constitutional amendment, including anti-gay adoption, vouchers, English only, all of the things they've tried to do for the last 30 years, will suddenly become easier to do because they won't have a single Democrat who can stop them.
Okay. It's frightening. It's actually very frightening. After the conference call the other night, I sort of cried into my wine and worried about this. And I want to pass this around to Tim and David, but I do want to try to loop back and talk about what kind of action we can all take to try to help this. I know it might not be something that we can do right away, but if we can...
But
I want to give Tim and David a chance to ask some questions specifically about the maps and the redistricting. Tim?
Okay. Thank you, Catherine, and good evening, Representative. Thank you for being with us tonight. Of course, we're very interested also in the House maps. Up here, our representative is Barbara Reese, a great lady, and we certainly hope these maps are going to be kind to her.
They are not.
But yeah, so I've noted. Now, the House and Senate maps are out there all over the Internet. Curiously, what is missing are any congressional maps. Have you been able to view any proposed congressional districts yet, or is that just not out there yet?
It's just not out there yet. You have on the congressional maps, I believe, the internecine fighting of the Republican caucus over who's going to get that 14th district. And I don't think they've been able to resolve that issue yet.
So then the rumor about infighting in the Republican Party about this issue is true then?
I believe that it is so. I think that you have a number of Republican senators who see this as an opportunity for advancement. They are clustered in the Northeast, and while the balance of power in the Republican Party does seem to be centered on Hall County, I think there's a question of how far out it can expand and who can get picked up by it. And so I think there are two issues with the map. One is I think the reason we haven't seen one is because of that internal fighting. I think the second issue, and this ties back to our concern about purging white voters and white Democrats, is that John Barrow's district, which is the last remaining district held by a white Democrat in the Deep South, is possibly being split in order to pack districts and dilute minority voting strength overall. And so if the pattern that they've demonstrated continues, I think they're keeping their powder dry until they have to show us what they've done on those maps too.
Okay, very, very somber thoughts there. Thank you, Representative David.
Well, Representative Abrams, I have a math question and more of a social studies question.
Sure.
I'm going to give you the math question first. In the 2008 presidential election, 47% of Georgians voted for the president. Well, 47% voted Democratic. How in the world, if 47% of the people in the state of Georgia are willing to be Democrats, can they pack us into just 56 state house districts out of 180?
That is part of our argument. And it's not just the Obama election, because some would say, well, maybe that was an outlier election. Roy Barnes, in the most Republican election in the history of the state of Georgia, still garnered 47% of the vote. Georgia it's about split. The difference in our voting population, the difference between whether we have a Democrat or a Republican in statewide office, is about 250,000 votes. And yet, if these maps pass as proposed, we will be 32% of the Georgia General Assembly. The issue there, and this goes back to the Voting Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act looks at the aggregate effect of maps as well as the individual ways that they draw them. If you dilute minority voting strength, if you eliminate the ability for minorities to build multiracial coalitions and you limit or eliminate their effective ability to participate in their government, you have violated the Voting Rights Act. And right now, the African-American population is about 35%. The Latino population is about 8%. That's 43%. Add the 2% Asian population, you're at about 45. And then if you add in the white population that votes and trends towards Democrats, it's another 25-27%. Now, not all of these people actually turn out and vote. But the issue is that in the aggregate, by creating these maps, by aggregating such power in the hands of a caucus that does not demonstrate any resemblance to the rest of Georgia, you are essentially diluting for the next 10 years any minority voting strength, and you are silencing Democrats.
Yes, which, I mean, I do believe that's one of their goals, and that's my next question. This goes to motivation. Obviously, their motivation is complete domination and control for as long as they possibly can have it. Now, do you think that they're using the Minority Voting Rights Act as a means to an end? I mean, like if they have to just pack districts a certain way just to elect Republicans, they're doing it. Or do you think they're trying to say to maybe your swing white Georgia voter, look, we're going to turn the Democratic Party of Georgia into a black party, and if you're just any kind of white person, you're just going to become a Republican. Which do you think is their motivation?
I think they're very complicated, and I think it's both. Here's the thing. It is absolutely the right of the party in power to maximize your political power. I take no exception to that. Democrats did it. Republicans did it. I don't think that it's legitimate for Democrats to cry foul because Republicans won the election and now want to aggregate their power. I don't have an issue with that. What I take exception to is how you do it. You cannot do it by violating the most sacred right of a democracy, which is the right to vote. And whether you do so to create this sort of cynical secondary option that you just laid out, which is to essentially say to white voters, we don't think you want to be a part of that party because it's too dark, or you do it because you think that it gives you it excuses your behavior. Either way, I find deeply problematic, and here's why. The Voting Rights Act is designed to integrate our politics. That's the whole point. Anytime you use it to justify resegregation, you're violating the spirit and the intent of the Voting Rights Act. But more than that, you're silencing the votes of the millions of white Democrats in Georgia. The Speaker, I think, has made a comment about if we're losing white voters, that's our problem, not his. I don't take exception to the members of the white members who switched parties back in November, with the exception of one. I think Doug McKillop is a different conversation. But I think for almost everyone else, their voting patterns reflected their politics. That's their prerogative. What I take exception to is the artificial creation, the manufacturing of racial segregation based on politics. Because when you do that, you are signaling to whites and blacks, to black Republicans as well as to white Democrats, that we don't believe that you can vote politics without voting race. And that's not the intent of the Voting Rights Act.
Yes. Well, I know we just have a few more minutes with you, and so I want to throw it back to Catherine so she can talk about these plan of action questions. Catherine?
Okay, thank you. Now, I want to better understand what impact we can have as citizens and activists and members of our party to try to soften, I guess is the best word, the blow that this could have. And if you could sort of outline some of the plans and sort of the strategy without revealing too much, because we never know who's listening.
Well, so three things. Number one, we need you to show up. We need Democrats to show up en masse at the Capitol. This is, I don't think we can emphasize enough how critical it is, because the way we fight a legal battle is to show that the people care about what we're doing. This cannot be a battle of politicians. If it's a battle of politicians, the politicians not in power lose. This has to be a battle of the people, and that means the people have to show up. Tuesday at 2 p.m., the House Reapportionment Committee is meeting. We need people to pack the room and to ask questions. We need to get the Republicans on the record explaining why they did what they did, explaining how it impacts each person's community. For example, with Barbara Reese, she is now in a 68% Republican-leaning district. This is someone who is, I think, an incredible spokesperson for her community, and yet they've changed her district. We need to show up and ask the hard questions and demand answers. Number two, we need – I'm sorry?
I wanted to just ask a question about that. One of the things, you know, I attended one of the hearings, the public hearings, and there were a lot of eloquent comments made at those hearings. I was at one, but I've talked to a lot of people who have been at other ones. And there were a lot of people who, you know, spoke specifically about, you know, communities of interest, representation on the committee and all those kind of things. And it seems to me that they paid absolutely no attention and took none of those comments to heart when they made these maps. Is that a legitimate complaint?
Absolutely.
If you're going to – okay, because that's one of the things that seems like we could focus on in these arguments in these hearings, because it just seems to me that if you're going to open up a forum then and seek comments and then to ignore them is just – you know, it's ridiculous. But, okay, go ahead. I just wanted to mention that.
It's okay. It was a sham because at the time they were taking these comments, they were drawing the lines. Their complaint about Democrats is that we didn't come to draw our maps until after the hearings ended. Well, we thought that was the point of the hearings. So it's absolutely essential. And the difference between now and those public hearings is that they have no excuse for not answering the questions. We now have maps to look at. We now have people sitting on those committees. They have to answer your questions, and if they don't, the question is why are they your representatives if they aren't willing to speak to you? So first and foremost, Tuesday, 2 p.m., show up at the Capitol, show up in those hearings, ask questions, sign up, ask questions, and you can ask anything you want. You are a citizen of the state. This is about your lines being drawn. This is about how you are represented. This is not about politicians. Number two, we are asking people to show up every day at the Capitol. We believe we'll be in at least Monday through Thursday, possibly Friday, but we want people to turn up, show up and wander the halls, call your legislators out, call any legislator out, and demand that they, if they're Republican or Democrat, they should vote against this map. And here's why. If Democrats in particular support a map that will essentially strip us of any ability to represent our citizens, we're talking about disenfranchising 47% of the state. There should be not a single Democrat who, for the sake of their own personal district, is willing to sacrifice the entirety of the state. And this is not simply about a show of solidarity. This is also about a legal strategy. We have to be able to show, as a matter of law, that we did not agree with what they tried to do. And so contact your legislators and let them know that you are hoping that they will stick together and that they will vote not for their own individual districts, but for Democrats and for the citizens of Georgia. The third thing is on Monday, tomorrow at 10:30, if you're in town, there's going to be a rally at City Hall just to gin up support and raise attention and awareness about redistricting starting. So the three things are contact your legislator and tell them to not support this map, show up at the Capitol and tell them not to support this map. Two, show up at 2 p.m. on Tuesday to ask questions about the maps as they are being drawn. And three, if you can come out on Monday, please do so.
Yes. Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Representative Abrams, thanks again for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and we hope you'll come on again, but we'll be excited to watch your work this week. And hopefully the governor and other Republicans will listen to you like they did on the Hope Scholarship bill this past session.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you all, and anytime you want me, I'm happy to come on.
Okay, great.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay, well, it was good to have Representative Abrams on and so knowledgeable and explains everything so well so you get a better understanding. Tim's right that those congressional maps, the best ones we have are the ones that Keith McCants, posted out there. And then they started getting posted other sources like Jim Galloway, but those have been kind of hidden. But then maybe it's because the Republicans are more interested in what they're doing in their own state house and state senate district as opposed to congressionally.
I think she hit on something, David. I think the map's being held back because there is some infighting going on about the location of that district. I believe there's some pulling and tugging in the Republican caucus about this thing because that new congressional district and the tweaking of the lines around the state, that's really the big plum prize this year, getting that new congressional district.
and a lot of people obviously want it, and the power in part of the, you know, the party in power appear to be turning on each other on it. So
yeah, I think you guys are right about that.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we can continue to talk about redistricting until our next guest comes on. One thing we didn't have time to talk to Representative Abrams about was interesting in today's Constitution. The Columbia Law School actually, you know, drew up another map, if you will. And it was a map that really, if you just looked at the actual layout of the districts, was not incredibly different than the one that was floated congressionally, although that new district around the Gainesville area may have still included Tom Graves' house, which obviously that's a sacred cow to some Republicans, but not to Columbia Law School folks. Did y'all happen to see that map?
I did not see it.
Tim?
No, sir. No, sir.
Okay, well, it's in today's AJC, and it's real interesting how they actually drew it out in a neutral fashion, and I would be interested to see the State House and State Senate districts and see how they look as well. I'm going to continue to check my email, making sure our guest isn't having some difficulty, because obviously this is around that call-in time, and we'll have plenty of time with Mayor Dupree as well. Well, let's kind of go back real quick while we got time to the Rick Perry story. Rick Perry gets in and almost stepped on his own story. The same day he announces for president, he talks about his alma mater, or maybe works more behind the scenes, I think Mike was telling me, about Texas A&M moving from the Big 12, which has 10 teams, we're talking a little more math here, to the SEC, which would almost effectively, if another team moved over, kill the Big 12, in which teams like, and Tim, you can help me with this, Texas Tech, University of Texas, I want to say Houston, I know Baylor, are all in that conference. So it affects a lot of Texas people, a lot of Texas schools. And obviously people that aren't with Texas A&M get ticked off about this. And for some people, college football is more important than politics. And you can make some people pretty angry. Tim, why in the world do you think he brought this issue up the same day, same week, same month he's running for president?
That was a huge mistake.
You know, friend of mine last night at our Jefferson Jackson dinner comes in, sits down. The first thing he mentions to me is not about Rick Perry getting in the race, but about what Rick Perry said about Texas A&M and the fact that college football, especially in the South, is almost a religious experience with these people. And, yeah, it'll blow politics out of the water this time of year. I don't know what he was thinking when he said that. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, and another thing that affects is where is the majority or at least the plurality of his money going to come from fundraising-wise, particularly in the early stages? It's going to come from Texas. Now, if he's got a big UT graduate that might have given to his gubernatorial campaigns every time and was planning on giving to this one, and then he's thinking, oh, my football team's not going to be in some peon conference, can't go to the BCS game. Rick, you messed me up. You know, President Obama, I mean, I agree with him and everything, but he didn't mess me up as bad as you did on college football for my team. And certainly, you know, Governor Romney or any of these other characters running for president, they didn't mess me up. Catherine, I know you're not the football follower that Tim and I may be, but what do you make of this from kind of more of an outside perspective?
Well, I just think it's interesting that he, you know, he's supposed to have this great team of strategists, this one, you know, this one guy whose name I can't remember, who's supposed to be this great strategist. It seems like they fumbled a little bit this week, you know, with the announcement before the straw poll, but not soon enough before the straw poll to really have an impact. And then this football thing, it just is strange that he's, I mean, because those seem to be fumbles. Maybe we're not seeing a bigger picture or something, but I'm kind of surprised because, you know, he's never lost a race. So I don't know.
It's a few missteps. Tim, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say, that is true that he's never lost an election. But there have been other guys that have run for the presidency who have never lost an election, like forever Nelson Rockefeller was going to be the next president of the United States. The polls showed that he would beat Democrats in the general election. The problem was the National Republicans never gave their heart to him. He never could win the election. Will National Republicans give their hearts to this guy? How are they going to feel when they find out that in 1988 this guy was a Democrat and that he chaired Al Gore's campaign in Texas? And then switch parties the next year when Karl Rove talked him into it. How are they going to feel about that? Are they going to think that he's a true believer then? You know, these things are going to start leaking out now. It's easy to be popular when you're not on the firing line. Well, now he's on the firing line, and not only are the Democrats going to turn their fire on him, but those other Republicans that want the nomination are going to do the same thing. And as we've seen, some of them, like Michelle Bachmann, are pretty effective at it. So,
yeah, you have people that want candidates to be pure, if you will, and this is going to be seen as a major letdown, this news about that he supported Democrat for president. It's funny, you never heard a lot about John Oxendine as far as blowback from him being the head of the Dukakis campaign in Georgia in 88. But then he sure didn't win the nomination. Didn't he make it to the runoff? People didn't say they voted on it, but they did.
Yeah. He also didn't run for president. This is entirely a different animal. Don't you think so, Catherine?
Oh, certainly it is different. And I think... Well, one more thing on all of this is, our guest last week, Joel Kuhn, mentioned how Governor Perry had never lost. Maybe there's some value in losing, because if you actually think about it, President Obama lost. George W. Bush lost. Bill Clinton lost. George Bush lost in president in 80. I believe he lost a U.S. Senate race to Lloyd Benson. Reagan, I'm not sure if he lost the 76 race you might count as a loss. You keep going back, Nixon lost. All these people lost throughout history, and Carter lost for governor. And they may have learned something from the loss, if you will. And so maybe him not having that experience, maybe he then makes mistakes that he would have learned from had he had that experience. Any thought that, Catherine, that losing actually honed your skills?
I think there's some validity to that. But I think, at least from my perspective, I don't like retreads in the same office. So I think losing, if you were to run for Senate or Congress or something and learn something about federal races in that regard and then run for president, but that's me. I just have issues with people running over and over again for president when they lose. There's a lot of examples of people who have gone on to be, successful in doing that. So I can't really, that's just my personal feeling. I mean, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort. Surely you can't go in expecting to lose. I mean, that would be foolish. But I think there is some validity in losing. I think that you learn lessons and you get the experience. So you think he'll run in 2016 then?
No, I don't think.
Young enough? How old is he?
Perry will. No, I don't think he needs to lose this one to then run again. But Mitt Romney's trying that. I think what I'm saying is, he didn't lose down the road. It's not like he needs to go run for dog catcher in his hometown in Texas and blow it. But I just mean that it's almost something he can't help, that he has a perfect record. But, this whole thing with Texas A&M, it was just a mistake to bring it up this week. If he brought it up, 4 months ago, and it was probably more appropriate, or just let it simmer till after the football season, and you know the die had been cast with the first two or three races, or let somebody else tote that water if you think it's so important. You move from the Big 12 to the SEC. I mean, you can still think it's important, but just let somebody else do it, because if it's the right thing to do, it'll get done. That's the whole other sports argument, if it's the right thing or not. Tune into the SSUradio.com if you want to hear that discussion. And looking at Texas, Texas gives us more people to talk about this week. Michael Burgess, I believe he's a suburban Houston congressman, he had the political courage as a Republican to raise the debt ceiling. You know, probably looked like a more reasoned, measured congressman. And so he goes to his first town hall after making this vote, and the Tea Party jumps all over Congressman Burgess. Now, instead of standing his ground and saying sometimes, you know, the right thing to do is not always the popular thing to do, he then somehow spins this into maybe the impeachment of President Barack Obama needs to happen, and needs to happen is a direct quote, as reported almost everywhere. He agreed with the Tea Party people that it would tie things up. Tim, what in the world was this guy doing?
Well, I tell you what he was doing late in the game. He knew who he was talking to. You know, that was music to their ears. We need to tie things up. And this thing about impeachment, they're not going to do that. It would badly damage them politically, just as it did Newt Gingrich and his Republicans in 1998. That's why we're talking about Newt as being Mr. Yesterday to this very day. But what it will do is it will make him suddenly the man again in his own little district, because he's seen the same poll that we've seen that shows the highest number of people ever in the history of this polling want to get rid of their own congressman. Generally, in past polls, Congress got low ratings, but everybody liked their own congressman. That does not seem to be so now, and what he's wanting to do is stave off a challenge from his right. And by voting, you know, to raise this debt ceiling, he's opened himself up to that, so he had to counteract that by saying what he has to know is a bunch of nonsense. You and I both know that a five-term congressman should know better than to say something like this otherwise.
Yeah, you can tell he was just trying to save his own hind parts, if you will.
Right,
just said something crazy. Now, I don't know what kind of district the guy will live in. If the guy lives in any kind of district that has any bit of swing to it, it may be that people can raise money against him to run. I don't know if they'll be successful.
Well, David, after last year, every Republican in this country who's holding political office is at least paying some homage to the Tea Party. They're doing it. They don't want to do it, a lot of them, but they're doing it.
Yeah, maybe he ends up filming one of those commercials where he's talking to the fake patriots in the tavern, if you will. Catherine, this story, you know, people can obviously say we don't agree with the president, but the president really hadn't left himself open to anything that even borders on impeachment. Where's this guy coming from?
I think he's just feeding the frenzy. You know, he's trying to backpedal because he voted for the debt ceiling. So his response is to, you know, call for impeachment. The idea of undertaking impeachment, I mean, aside from the fact that there's no validity to any argument for it, the idea of doing it right now is so ridiculous with the circumstances around the economy,
the, you know, the two wars, all the other things that we have on our plate to deal with. I mean, you all remember what it was like when during the Clinton impeachment, everything was on hold. Nothing got done. And now I know that's their goal, but there's a lot of things that really have to be handled, whether you like the way the president's doing it or not. They're you know, urgent issues on the table that need to be addressed. And the idea of distracting everything by an impeachment and tying everything up is so unpatriotic and so contrary to the things that really need to be done right now. It's just...
Yeah, I think even if
exactly
we were to go
anywhere, we shouldn't have elected all those guys.
Yeah, if this thing were to go anywhere, it would turn the president into a much more sympathetic figure. It would definitely get that. Oh, they're out to get him for sure.
They would get a backlash from the voters like you've never seen, because the voters are already mad. Why make them madder by just wasting time with nonsense? They sent that message in 98, and I'm going to tell you what, in a presidential election next year, they'd send that message tenfold, and a guy like John Boehner, I don't like him, of course, but I'm not going to say he's not a smart politician. He knows stuff like that. So what I think he's going to do is walk the chalk line, let these guys talk about impeachment, but there's not one thing going to see the light of day up there in Congress about this. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. This guy, I mean, but is just saying this kind of crazy stuff. And it's just, at one point, this, you know, people say, I don't want my congressman, you know, maybe I'm a conservative. I want a conservative congressman, but maybe I don't want someone that's just crazy and will just say anything to please a group of people that are even crazier, if you will. You know, this is where the Tea Party gets scary, if you will. Well, we got another Tea Party story in our last 7 minutes. I didn't know if we'd get to this one, but looks like we will. In Cherokee County, Georgia, there was a charter school proposal, and this would almost be one where the school board had to approve it, and I think it would divert some, you know, higher quality students from, or maybe more motivated students from the regular schools there in Cherokee County. Now, we could debate or you know, how good or bad whatever charter schools are, but this isn't really, I guess, the place that we want to do this discussion. Apparently, the Tea Party in Cherokee County was big proponents of this charter school. Not that it would be a Tea Party charter school in any means. I really don't know a lot about the actual content. I guess I should know more. But a majority of the 10-member, and I'd never heard of a 10-member school board, 6 of 10, voted against the charter school. Now, all 10 members of the Cherokee County school board are Republicans. There's no Democrats on the school board, probably no Democrats that even have a real chance at winning, because Cherokee County, if you don't know it, is one of the most Republican counties in Georgia. They're taking on these school board members. They're railing against them, if you will. And even one of the school board members is known as the dog-faced gremlin, one of Catherine's home people from Michigan. Catherine, is this just a sign of things to come where the Tea Party is going to almost divide the Republican Party into two camps?
I think that's a big fear, and I think that's why, I mean, this is a smaller example of the bigger thing that happened with this whole debt ceiling controversy, is that they're holding the Republican Party hostage, just like they all held President Obama hostage. But I think they're holding the Republican Party hostage, and that's why I think that you see this success of Michelle Bachmann and people like her in the national news, because everyone's afraid of the power that they have, because their people are so outspoken and so willing to step out and do something. I think it's a very big fear, and you know, I mean, it could split the Republican Party. I'm not sure. I think what is more likely to happen is that they'll just cave.
the more moderate Republicans will cave to, and they are caving to these, you know, more wacky Tea Party, you know, what do we call them? Tea boat. Well, whatever. I can't remember. Anyway.
Yeah.
Tea boat birthers for truth. That's what I call them.
Yeah, Tim. What do you think of these folks, if you will?
Well, look. The county party demanded that four of the members of the school board change their opposition to support of charter schools or renounce their affiliation with the Republican Party. You see, if they vote for local funds to go to these new charter schools, it takes money away from the public school system in the long run because of the number of students moving and whatnot. I believe the whole thing behind it, these people are so distrustful of the government. They want the government, in their view, out of education, which means they hate the public school system. I think one of the biggest, stupidest things I've ever heard in my life is them naming their belief system school choice. They don't want any choice unless you choose their way. And let me ask you something else. If these charter schools want to be independent of the government and have these hand-picked, unelected boards of directors, then why should my tax money, one dime of it, go there? Let them fund these schools themselves. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's this you know, novel approach, but I think one of the biggest things is if these parents have to choose to send their kids there and have to get them there and all that, these are usually really motivated parents. If you were to put these children in the regular schools, they're going to improve the regular schools, make
right.
it better, because a lot of times if people that, you know, parents that are involved and are going to take time all leave just the general district public schools, then that's going to hurt those schools and hurt the education for even more students. So I don't think that these six members did the wrong thing at all. Of course, my dream scenario, of course, is one of these really crazy teabaggers, maybe the type that stomped the lady outside the Kentucky debate, would decide to cross Rick Steiner. And if you go on Wikipedia, he could unleash a list of his signature moves, about 10, you know, DDT, German release, suplex, Steiner line, and everything else. But Catherine, I guess another issue here, Michigan people are coming down to Georgia and getting pretty politically involved. We got you on the Democratic side. We got Rick Steiner on the Republican side. Now you got to get him on the show. You do see him at the meetings, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The meetings of the Michiganders in Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, do those take place at a Kid Rock concert?
We sit around and eat pretzels and drink. We try to find Stroh's beer, but of course it's gone.
So. Yeah, I'm just teasing around with you. Well, I tell you what, it's been a good show, and I don't know what happened with our second guest. It may have been a technical glitch. I know there was some time issues, some confusion there, which if, you know, of course I apologize if there's anything I ever do wrong. But maybe we can still get Mary Dupree on soon, because we're still in awe of the record that which we've learned about. Of course, I did some research, and y'all probably did too. He has a phase one, phase two, and phase three on some of his platform plans. So he's a very detail-oriented person, which to me, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You actually put thought into it, because sometimes I think some folks run for political office, and when I have them on to ask them, you know, why did you run for office, we might get crickets chirping. But it certainly wouldn't be the case with Mayor Dupree. Catherine, you always know about an event or two going on. Is there anything you want to plug here in the last minute of the show?
Well, I want to make sure people know that we really need them at the Capitol on Tuesday. I'm planning on taking some time off work if I can and going down and showing up. Then there's also a rally. The Democratic Party of Georgia is having their Hope and Unity rally next Monday
on the Capitol steps. You can go to the Democratic Party of Georgia website and look at that. And then I also wanted to remind everybody that next Sunday we have Jason Carter, State Senator Jason Carter, will be our guest, and he'll be able to fill us in on what's happened over this week and then what we have to look forward to, so to speak, for the next week. So I think there's a lot going on, and anyone who's interested in making sure that Democrats have good representation here in Georgia really needs to make some phone calls and show up at the Capitol if they can.
Yes. And, Tim, I know y'all's JJ dinner was last night in Chattooga. Been making it recently, but last night was not a possibility for me. Anything noteworthy?
Well, we did have a great event. We had just about a full house. We held the event for the first time at the historic depot. If any of you out there saw the movie Warm Springs, the depot scenes in that movie were filmed in Somerville at the depot. And so we were in a historic place, and former Congressman Buddy Darden gave us a good dose of his folksy humor, and we just had a great time, David. And we sure did miss you. There were some people from Floyd County with us, but I did miss you there.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I got to get more involved in Chattooga County. If these maps were to hold, Barbara Reese would be my state representative, which I guess that's one good thing out of these maps. Of course, we'd have to work hard to hold her in with a 60% plus GOP voting pattern. But maybe we could swing some votes for a quality representative like Representative Reese. Well, it's been the Kudzu Vine, been a great show, and thanks again to Representative Stacey Abrams for coming on and giving us so much knowledge about redistricting in Georgia.
Good night, guys.
Good evening, everybody.
Good night.